ಸ್ವಾಮೀ ಹರಿ ಪ್ರಿಯೇ ನಮೋ ಮಹಾವದನ್ಯಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರೇಮಾ ಪ್ರದಾಯತೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ನಾಮ್ನೇ ಗೌರೇತಿಷೇ ನಮಃ ವಾಂಛಾಸ್ವಲ್ಪತೃಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯ ಏವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ನಮ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರೇಷ್ಠಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮತೆ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿತಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತೇ ದೇವೇ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣೇ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣೇ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸ್ತವಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ ಐ ವಾಸ್ ಬೋರ್ನ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಡಾರ್ಕ್ನೆಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಇಗ್ನೋರೆನ್ಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಮೈ ಸ್ಪಿರಿಚುವಲ್ ಮಾಸ್ಟರ್ ಓಪನ್ ಮೈ ಐಸ್ ವಿತ್ ದ ಥಾಟ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ನಾಲೆಜ್ ಐ ಆಫರ್ ಮೈ ರೆಸ್ಪೆಕ್ಟ್ಫುಲ್ ಒಬೇಯನ್ಸಸ್ ಅನ್ಟು ಹಿಮ್ When was Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet. Jai Sri Rupa Goswami Prabhupada ki. Jai. ಇಂದ್ರಾದಯೋ ಬಾಹವ ಆಹುಸ್ರಃ ಕರ್ಣೋ ದಿಶಾ ಸ್ತೋತ್ರಮಮುಸ್ಯ ಶಬ್ದಃ ನಾಸತ್ಯದಸ್ರೌ ಪರಮಸ್ಯ ನಾಸೇ ಗ್ರಾನೋಸ್ಯ ಗಂಧೋ ಮುಖಂ ಅಗ್ನಿರಿದ್ಧಃ ಆಕ್ಚುಲಿ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಬೈ ಚಾಂಟಿಂಗ್ ದೀಸ್ ವಂಡರ್ಫುಲ್ ವರ್ಸಸ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಅಂಡ್ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ ಸೋ ಮಚ್ ಪ್ಯೂರಿಫಿಕೇಶನ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಹಾರ್ಟ್ ಟೇಕ್ಸ್ ಪ್ಲೇಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ನಾಟ್ ಓನ್ಲಿ ಆರ್ ವಿ ಪ್ಯೂರಿಫೈಡ್ but we are also pacified. We may not even understand the true meaning of the Sanskrit words, but just by having faith that everything that emanates from Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita is about Krishna and from Krishna, that itself is enough to purify the devotee. And in that way, without even realizing it, we actually become very pacified. So this is the power and potency of Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. And we have no idea how powerful it is, because it constantly is purifying us, even as we discuss, even as we read, even as we hear. Even if we did not speak anything after this, just by following and reading this process and chanting the verses, actually our devotional service is increased. So that is why we always urge devotees that don't have the mental block that you cannot chant the verses. You don't have to worry whether you can chant them in a sweet voice or a rough voice. It doesn't matter. The most important thing is whether we are trying to chant these verses with devotion and we are trying to hear the verses with eagerness. If we do that, then actually Bhagavatam and Prabhupada, through his purports, will actually speak to us. So this verse is very nice because it continues about speaking about the universal form description. We all have been hearing so many verses on this very wonderful form of the Lord. And in the verses before this already, we have started to understand how wonderful and powerful Krishna is. Everything, every part of the Lord actually constitutes every part of this known and unknown material and spiritual universes. And even though Prabhupada has stated in the verses and the purport that this Virat Rupa is only in that sense, not even the highest transcendental form of Krishna, still this form is so powerful and so gigantic and so wonderful that even the materialist, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, can actually increase his devotional service or can move away from the path of materialism and become purified just by hearing about the fact that Krishna is all in all. So here in the purport, you find, or rather in the translation, already Shukadeva Goswami has started to explain how the different parts of the Virat Rupa actually are also composed of all the living entities. Particularly in this case, he is describing how different body parts of his also correspond to the different demigods. And for example, the arms of the demigods which are headed by, no, the arms of the Virat Rupa is actually headed by Indra. And then the 10 directional sides are his ears, the physical sound, his sense of hearing. So from this, the most important implication, which is very obvious actually, is that everything in this world is part and parcel of Krishna. Nothing in this creation is outside of Krishna. So what can it matter to us who are living in this world? If just by understanding that Krishna is everything and everywhere, how does it affect us as devotees? This is the important point we must remember. The important point is, if we know that everything in this world is coming from Krishna, then it follows then that we should try and understand that anything that happens to us or happens around the world, we must try and see the hand of Krishna in it. If we see the hand of Krishna in everything that happens, then we don't lament unnecessarily and we don't rejoice unnecessarily, because everything is moving by the direction of the Lord. So the first point we can understand, just to put it in perspective, is that this universal form description Prabhupada has mentioned many times, he refers also to the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And if you go down further, I think in the 3rd canto, 6th chapter, you find that there is a specific chapter entitled Creation of the Universal Form. So if at all we come one day to the 3rd canto, 6th chapter, if we can do it within this lifetime, it would be very nice. And if at all we come to that chapter together, or if you are reading, you find that that further gives us the nice points and the descriptions and the details of this wonderful breakdown of how this universal form of Krishna is and how it constitutes all of this material universe. The second part in the purport actually, which begins in the purport, and Prabhupada makes it a point for us to understand, is that there is a link between Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. In fact, Prabhupada says that Bhagavatam is the postgraduate study of Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada goes on to say that both these wonderful scriptures are in that sense interdependent. We cannot divorce one scripture from the other. We cannot say that now I'm studying Bhagavatam, therefore if I study Bhagavad Gita I'll become confused. Sometimes we hear this very often, Prabhu, if I read one verse of Bhagavad Gita in the evening, one verse of Bhagavatam in the morning, I get confused between both verses. Actually, our capacity in the human brain is much more than what we think it is. We can remember so many things in our work for the whole day. We are all experts at multitasking. But when it comes to studying one verse of Bhagavad Gita and one verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, we say it becomes very confusing. It is good if it's confusing. If you mix up both verses, it's very good, because both verses are interdependent. They are meant to be related to each other. So what is the harm if we follow this perfect process that Prabhupada has given? It is not only that when we come to the temple, we should hear Bhagavad Gita in the evening, and then on Sunday we hear Bhagavatam, and then after that, if we hear both of them on the same day, we become confused. So we should not think that way. Daily, in the morning, we should hear and we should chant and we should read one verse of Bhagavatam, and in the evening, we should read, chant and hear one verse of Bhagavad Gita. That is the minimum that we can do. Minimum. And one verse hardly takes 10-15 minutes, Prabhu and Mataji. And yet, for us to do this day in, day out, becomes so difficult, because we don't have faith in what Prabhupada is actually stating in the purport, that Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are interdependent. So this is very important. Why? Because Prabhupada says one speaks from Krishna. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking. He's speaking all about himself, all about devotional service. And in Bhagavatam, there are topics about Krishna, from the devotees, from Krishna, from the devotees, from Krishna. So both are equally important. If you hear about Krishna from Krishna, or if you hear about Krishna from others who are devotees of the Lord, and specifically we are talking about devotees. We are not talking about professional reciters. We are talking about devotees and pure devotees. In Bhagavatam's case, it is pure devotees of the Lord. Then, if you read the purport of 7th chapter, 1st verse, there itself, Prabhupada writes, just to hear about Krishna and just to hear from Krishna is itself righteous activity. Is itself righteous activity, meaning it is the correct thing for us to do. So this point we must remember. There is a verse in Bhagavatam, it is in 1.6.26 of Bhagavatam. Very nice verse. In 1.6.26, Narada Muni, after taking nice purification from the Bhaktivedantas, what happened was he became so purified that he put aside all the formalities of the material world and he began to try and meditate on the Lord. Just for a brief moment, he took darshan of the Lord and then the darshan vanished. So once the darshan vanished, for a while he became a bit dejected because he thought he could not see Krishna. But then after that, Krishna spoke to him. And when he spoke to him, then Sukadeva Goswami explains to us in 1.6.26, he says, Etavadukvo Pararama Tanmaha. This is a very important verse. Etavadukvo Pararama Tanmaha Bhutam Nabolinga Malingami Swaram Aham Chatasmai Mahata Mahiyashe Shishnavanamam Vidadenu Kampitaha. And the translation is very important for us to understand why Prabhupada is saying about Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita in this purport. Because there, Sukadev Goswami says, then that supreme authority, who is Krishna? What happened? How is Krishna described in that verse? That supreme authority personified by sound, unseen by eyes. This is nice point. He is personified by sound, which means the moment we hear anything about Krishna, like we are doing now, Krishna is personified. He's personified. He is here with us. He's in our tongue. He's in our heart. He's before us here. So Krishna immediately becomes personified the moment we speak about him. That's all. We don't have to run anywhere. We can sit here. But he's personified by sound, yet he's unseen by the eyes. Why? Because the eyes are not as important as the ears. Bhagavatam tells us that if we hear about Krishna, or if we hear from Krishna, we can see Krishna. We can see Krishna in our hearts, we can see Krishna in our lives, we can see the hand of Krishna in all the happenings of our lives. Then we do not lament, we are not down when anything happens to us. This comes about when we hear about Krishna. This is very important. And in the purport, then after that, personified by sound, unseen by eyes, he stopped speaking. And the moment he stopped speaking, what did Naradaji do? Naradaji then said that he felt a sense of gratitude. He was grateful that the Lord had spoken to him. And this is what we should inculcate in our hearts. We should inculcate a sense of gratitude. Gratitude that Krishna has come in the form of Bhagavad Gita. And gratitude to the pure devotees that they have given us Bhagavatam for us to remember Krishna. If we have that gratitude, then what happens to us? Then Narada Muni offered his obeisances and he bowed his head. So this is very important for us to remember. The mood of a devotee in hearing from Krishna is that he is grateful that he can hear about Krishna. Very often we want more and more and more from Krishna, but we don't realize that Krishna has supplied us with everything. We are always, 90% of the time, the living entity's prayer to Krishna is more and more and more. I have this but I'm not satisfied. I have that but I'm not satisfied. I have this but I'm not pacified. But because we don't have the sense of gratitude, we cannot become pacified. Just hearing from Krishna is the means and the end. There is nothing more for us to do. There is nowhere for us to go. There is no other activity for us to do over and above this, except to hear. That is all we should be satisfied with. And yet, because we live in a complicated world, we always think that if something is simple, it must be defective. If something is complicated, there must be merit. This is the unfortunate circumstance of Kali Yuga. Unnecessarily we complicate our lives. We don't want to sit down peacefully, and we don't want to hear from Bhagavad Gita and hear from Bhagavatam. So the purport tells us that Bhagavad Gita hearing is very important. And in the purport to 1.6.26, Prabhupada tells us conclusively that the personality of Godhead was not seen but only heard does not make any difference. Prabhupada has made it very clear. Then he goes on to say that the Bhagavad Gita is the sound representation of the Lord, and there is no difference in identity. No difference. Just by hearing Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is present. Just by hearing Bhagavatam, Krishna is present. And then Prabhupada says the conclusion of this point of hearing is that the Lord can be seen and heard by persistent chanting of the transcendental sound. This is all we have to remember. By the persistent chanting of the transcendental sound. The transcendental sound vibration of Krishna, that means anything to do with Krishna, whether reading Bhagavatam, chanting verses, reading the purport, chanting the holy name of the Lord, anything connected to Krishna's pastimes and activities is transcendental. That means we can hear and see Krishna. But how must this transcendental chanting go on? It must be persistent. It must be persistent. Persistent means when you persist in something, that means some endeavor is there. Some labor is there. And persistency means implies that there are obstacles. Isn't it? Always when you use, Prabhu, I persisted. When you use the word persisted, it means you persisted because there was something blocking you. But you kept going and going and going. So Prabhupada is telling us that there will always be these blockages. That's the material world. There is the material world. But if we persist, we keep trying and trying and trying, without consideration of hopelessness, defeat, failure, it doesn't matter. But just keep trying. Just persist. Then what happens? Bhagavad Gita appears in our heart. And the impact of Bhagavad Gita in our heart is also very important for us. And once we know this, then we can understand why. From the description of the Virat Rupa, Prabhupada speaks about the importance of hearing from Bhagavad Gita. And the importance is given in, I think there are 5 or 6 verses in the first canto, second chapter, Divinity and Divine Service. If these verses we remember, then we can understand why the science of hearing is so important. Why we hear about Krishna's huge gigantic form. Why we are hearing about the importance of Krishna and how the demigods are nothing compared to him. Why are we hearing all this? Because of what Bhagavatam tells us in these verses. We know the verses. Sunavatam Swakatha Krishnaha. Right? Punya Shravana Kirtanam. Hriti. Hriti. Antastohi Abhadrani. Then Vidunoti Suhad Satam. Then after that, Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Vaishtiki. Tado Rajas Tamos Bhava. Then Kama Lovas Dayas Chaye Cheta Etai Anamidham Sitam Satve Prasidati Evam Prasanna Manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yogataha Bhagavad Tattva Vijnanam and Mukta Sangasya Jayate. Then Vidyate Hrithaya Grantis Chityante Sarva Samsayaha Chityante Shiyante Chasya Karmani Drishta Evad Manishwari. These verses we should keep very close to our hearts. I think it is 1 to 17 to 21, somewhere there. These verses we should just know the moment we wake up, automatically we should know these verses. These verses will save us at our most difficult and lowest times of our lives. Because these verses explain to us how just by hearing about Krishna, we are being purified. And if you read in the purport of 7th canto, 1st chapter, Prabhupada has very nicely put the verses together and he has very nicely summarized the whole process of hearing very nicely. He starts by saying, just hearing about Krishna, or hearing about Krishna or from Krishna, that means Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, is itself righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, what does Krishna do? Krishna being the well-wisher, the friend who is in our hearts as the super soul, what does he do? He begins to purify the devotee who constantly hears about him. And how does he purify? He purifies the devotee by naturally developing in the devotee his love for dormant transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge is the difference between a devotee who is progressing in devotional service and a devotee who is struggling in devotional service. Most of the time, Prabhu and Mataji, we talk about knowledge and knowledge and knowledge. But most of the time we underestimate the power of reading Bhagavatam and studying Bhagavad Gita. Because if we acquire the transcendental knowledge about Krishna from Krishna and the devotees, then this knowledge acts to purify our heart. That is why Prabhupada insists we must read. If any one of us is not consistently reading Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, we cannot hear with eagerness and devotion about Krishna. It will automatically not come. But if we persistently try and study the verses and study about Krishna, then this dormant transcendental knowledge is awakened by Krishna. And once it is awakened, then the devotee becomes fixed. Stitam. Stitam means fixed. Satve. Prasidati. Then he becomes fixed in his knowledge and the devotional service. Otherwise what happens is, one day we are with Krishna, one day something bad happens, we go into Maya. Next day we come out, we are with Krishna. Third day, Maya Devi visits us. Like that, up and down, up and down. This is not the devotional service because we are not hearing consistently. Never have I heard a devotee who persistently is hearing and studying Bhagavatam, who is in the difficulty when he is practicing Krishna consciousness nicely. Even in the difficulty, he is seeing the hand of Krishna. And therefore, he is not in difficulty. So this process is perfect. Then when you become fixed in the devotional service, then he becomes freed from the modes of the material nature. Rajas, tamas, we come out of it. Kama, lobha, dayaschaye. We are freed from the material lust and the avarice. Automatically, these things are freed just by hearing. Just by hearing. Constantly. From the Lord, about the Lord, from the Lord, about the Lord. And the moment we come out of these material modes, the moment the material lust and avarice goes, then we become situated in pure goodness. And the moment we are situated in pure goodness, then vidyate hridaya grantis bhakti yoga, this process of hearing, it will sever the hard knot of material affection. This knot of material entanglement is so strong that we are so attached to anything and everything except Krishna. We see everyone and anything in relation to ourselves. We are attached to family, friends, society, but to Krishna, we find it difficult to get attached to. And because of this hard knot, you find that even as we try to perform devotional service, we find it very hard to cut the knot of material attachment. Somehow or another, we will keep some corner in our heart for some material activity, which we feel we need for some entertainment. If we do too much of chanting, we have to go to our computer games for a while. If we do too much of chanting, we have to watch a movie after a while. Why? Because we say, I've worked very hard, now I need to become peaceful, now I need to enjoy. It is completely opposite, upside down. We should be enjoying when we are chanting, and we should be suffering when we are watching the TV. But when watching the TV, the eyes and the senses and Maya Devi tells us, this is so nice, chanted your 16 rounds, done your Bhagavatam, came in morning on Sunday, everything you have done nicely, Sunday evening, take a walk, go somewhere, do a bit of relaxation. After all, you need it, isn't it? So hard you're working in devotional service, it's taxing you really. So Krishna is out of the equation. He's out of the equation. This is a material knot. And then, if this hearing is persistent, then we come to the stage of asamsayam samagram, understanding the supreme absolute truth, personality of Godhead. So please, remember these verses. Study them very deeply and never forget the science of hearing. Once we hear Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam this way, then only we will become safe. In fact, Brahmaji, a demigod and one of the greatest and highest living personalities, when he was born from the lotus stem, when he was born in that darkness, the only thing he turned to was within the heart to reach out to the lotus feet of the Lord. He knew nothing except one sound that was emanating from this material universe. It was coming from Shabda, so it was coming from Krishna. And it was ta, pa, ta, pa, ta, pa. This is all he heard. And tapa means austerity. Austerity means endeavor. Endeavor means persistence. And persistence only has value if we try to hear persistently. So Brahmaji, for 1,000 years of his time, not ours, of his time, he sat down and just meditated on hearing the transcendental sound that was emanating. And by doing that, Krishna gave him all dormant transcendental knowledge to create this material universe. And that came because of his persistence in hearing. If we were formed from a lotus stem, we would have sat down there and we don't know what to do. We would have looked here, looked there, become confused and go back into the lotus stem. But Brahma persisted, and he persisted for 1,000 of his years. And that persistence paid off. Krishna doesn't expect us to persist for 1,000 years, for the frank reason that we won't live for 1,000 of our human years. But at least every day, let us persist little while in the morning, little while in the evening, to hear about Krishna. That won't kill us. It won't strangle us. It won't destroy us. In fact, it will purify us. So this point is very nicely given by Krishna about hearing. Also, in the 11th chapter that Prabhupada quotes, Prabhupada quoted 11:30 of Bhagavatam here, and just maybe about 6 verses after that, Arjuna starts his prayers after seeing this great, gigantic, universal form of the Lord. Arjuna became bewildered, confused. At the same time, after being so confused and so bewildered and so amazed at this wonderful form of the Lord, you'd expect that the first prayer that Arjuna would start off by saying would be to say, "Wow, what an amazing form of the Lord you have." But Arjuna did not do that. As a devotee, true devotee, he starts his first prayer, I think in 11:36. And this prayer, Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj chanted, I think he was at Radha Gopal Prabhu's house. And he made this very important point. He said that we chant the holy names of the Lord and we always speak about the holy name on the authority of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But sometimes we forget that even in Bhagavad Gita, the pure devotee Arjuna has already spoken about the glory of chanting the holy name. And that was much before even Mahaprabhu came to re-emphasize and re-establish the chanting of the holy name. And this is the verse that Maharaj was speaking on. Sane Rishikesha Tava Prakritya. Sane means again to become fixed. And he says Rishikesha, that means Lord, you are master of the senses. That means Arjuna is begging, you please control my senses. That means he is pure devotee. He is telling us that when we approach Krishna, we should pray to Krishna as Rishikesha to control the material hard knot of material affection and break it. So he says, Sane Rishikesha Tava Prakritya Jagat Prahishyati Anurajyateva. In these two lines, he is saying that, O master of the senses, the world becomes joyful. Joyful, huh? He uses the word joyful, that means happy. If we really want to become happy, Arjuna has given the formula tucked away in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He says that the world becomes joyful just upon hearing your name. There, Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj says, is your evidence that if you really want to become really happy in the heart, really if you want to free yourself of the material anxieties, of all the ups and downs of our material life, then please put aside everything and anything and just hear Krishna's names. And you will become joyful. In fact, the world becomes joyful, he says. Then he goes on to say, and everyone, because of this joyfulness, everyone becomes pacified. Prabhupada translates anurajyate and prahishyati as becoming satisfied. Very nice point. That very often in this world, we talk about becoming purified, purified, purified. But the result of purification is joy and becoming pacified in our heart. So, if we don't know whether we are being purified, then the symptom, to understand whether we are purified or not, will be to test ourselves in the heart. Are we really joyful in our heart? Are we really pacified and satisfied in our lives? Or are we still hankering? If we are still hankering, that means we have not taken up to the process of hearing nicely. That means there is some problem in our devotional service. And that is why we are in the difficulties. That is why Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are interdependent. They both are so wonderful together that every verse you find in Bhagavatam, you will find a corresponding verse in Bhagavad Gita and vice versa. And vice versa. So, we have heard the glories of the chanting of the holy name, in 11:36 of Bhagavad Gita. And this is a very important point. We now know also why hearing about Bhagavatam is so important. And if we know that Bhagavatam is important, if we know Bhagavad Gita is important, then we should only read and chant Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and nothing else is needed. Nothing else is needed. Because both of them are Shabda, both of them are transcendental sound. What need is there for anything else? It is self-sufficient. Just hearing is enough. How many devotees just heard about Krishna and they went back? Dhruva Maharaj may have approached Krishna at the beginning for a material consideration. But the moment he was touched by Krishna, and the moment he saw the form of the Lord, the purification took place. And the moment he started chanting and glorifying Krishna in his prayers, he could hear the transcendental sound vibrations of glorification of Krishna. And by hearing that, by the end of his prayers, he wanted nothing but pure devotional service. See the power of hearing. See the power of connecting to Krishna. So this is the point that Prabhupada is speaking. This is why Prabhupada has brought up this point of Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and why he has referred that the universal form is found in both Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. The second point that we can understand in the purport that Prabhupada speaks about is that Krishna's Virat Rupa includes everything. The great demigods like Indra, Brahmaji, Ashwini Kumaras, all of them are all part and parcel of Krishna only. So the implication then is, by worshipping Krishna, everyone and everything is satisfied. This point we must remember. What is that verse? 5.15.13. It is the glories of Maharaj Priyavrata. In that verse, 5.15.13 I think. There, it is very nicely stated. Yat prinana barhisi devatiryan manusya virat trinama virincha prita sadhya sahavishva jiva prita swayam pritim agadgayasyaha. It's a very nice and instructive verse for us to remember. In that verse, Krishna is being described in this way. Yad prinanad. Yad prinanad, Prabhupada writes there, is by satisfying the personality of Godhead. King Gaya, who is being described here, was a great devotee of the Lord. He was only aiming to always please Krishna and his devotees. That was all his life was about. And because he was completely surrendered to pleasing the devotees and Krishna, when he started performing a fire sacrifice, Krishna himself came personally to tell him that I am pleased. Prabhupada writes in the purport that Krishna doesn't have to come to tell anyone he is pleased. Why? Because Krishna is Purnam. And he is avasmitamtam paripurnakamam. He is satisfied within himself. In other words, he is pleased with himself. He doesn't need anyone to please him. And yet that same Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared at the fire sacrifice of King Gaya to tell him, King Gaya, I am pleased. So Prabhupada says, how much must be the glories of King Gaya? How powerful he must have been as a devotee. And this verse is important because just by pleasing Krishna, then everything else in this universe becomes pleased. What becomes pleased? Barhisi. Barhisi means the sacrificial arena. We don't have to do any Vaishnava homam. Just you chant Krishna's names and Vaishnava homam becomes pleased. The sacrificial arena becomes pleased. Devatirian. Deva means all the demigods who are part and parcel of this universal form of the Lord, they become very happy. Very happy. You don't have to do separate pujas for them. Everyone becomes satisfied just by pleasing Krishna. Tirian means all other lower forms of life in this world. They also become pleased. Then Manusya. Manusya means human society. Prabhupada doesn't say human beings. He says human society. That means society itself becomes pleased. Manusya Virut. Virut means all the forms of plants and trees, they also become pleased. These trees that cannot move, we think that they don't have consciousness, but they become conscious when Krishna is spoken about and glorified. If we are speaking about Krishna, every tree outside in Serangoon Road is becoming pleased. We lack the faith to believe that this is so. We laugh, ha ha ha, how can it be? Or we laugh, ha ha, it's very funny. But the truth is, it is true. Manusya Vira Trinam, Trinam, even the grass, Bhagavatam says, becomes pleased. Any grass growing outside hearing Krishna's name becomes pleased. That's why we must do the 12-hour kirtan. For 12 hours the grass becomes leaf. For 12 hours everyone becomes leaf. What to speak of us? We also become leaf. Deva Tiryan Manushya Virat. Trinam, grass, Avirinchat. All living entities from the end, beginning up to Brahmaji. Everyone becomes satisfied. Created Sadhya Sahavishva Jiva. Whole universe becomes satisfied. Why? Because Priyeta means with devotion if we hear about Krishna. With devotion if we perform the activities to Krishna. Everyone becomes satisfied. So the point that Prabhupada is making in the purport is, all these demigods, there is no need for us to go beyond. No, we don't have to go anywhere. We just come to the root of all roots. And that root is the supreme truth. He is the highest truth. Prabhupada writes at the end of this purport, right? He says specifically, everything else is imaginary. Only Krishna is true. Only Krishna is true. What is that? Dharma projita kaitava atra paramo nirmatsarahanam satam vedyam vastava atra vastu sivadam tapatrayan mulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamunikrite Kimva Pare Ishvaraha. Last line. Sadhyo Hriddhi Avaruddhate Atra Kritibihi Shushrubihi Tatshana. This is what Prabhupada means by saying everything else is imaginary and only Krishna is real. Vedyam Vastava Atra Vastu Sivadam. The highest truth is propounded by Srimad Bhagavatam. If we reject all others which are not highest, and if we reject all other religious and so-called religious authorities, and if we approach Krishna without motivation except to hear about it, then what will happen? Then this Bhagavatam will propound the highest truth by manifesting itself as the culture of self-knowledge within our heart. And it comes, when it comes, it does two things to us. One, it comes sadhya, immediately, tatshanat, without delay. Second, it places this knowledge of realization, this dormant transcendental knowledge within our heart. But it needs two qualifications for us to understand this highest truth. One is attentively hearing and the other is submissively hearing. We cannot attentively hear Krishna if we are not submissive. And if we are not submissive, we cannot be attentive. This is a very important point to understand. And this truth is considered the highest truth because it is the only real truth. Everything else is imaginary. The highest truth is reality, which is distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Remember 1136 that we just quoted? The world becomes joyful and becomes pacified. For the welfare of this world, we have to be connected to the highest truth. For the welfare of the world, we must understand what is reality and what is illusion. And we must distinguish between what is real and what is not real. Worship of the demigods will not bring us the pacification and dormant transcendental knowledge into being. It will not make us understand the highest truth. But if we respect the demigods as part and parcel of Krishna, and if we understand that Krishna is the source of all the demigods, and he is the source of all strength, what is that? Paurusham Nishu, isn't it? In Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter, he is known as Paurusham Nishu. He is ability in all, ability in man. Any ability you have, whether you can sing nicely, chant nicely, good preacher, cook very nicely, these are all not coming from us. They are coming finally from Krishna, whether through his universal form, by the universal management of this universe, or whether by his spiritual form, in the wonderful management and giving of mercy to the devotees, it is all coming from Krishna only. So if we are in difficulty, who should we turn to? It is only Krishna. Sometimes we say, we are trying to reach pure devotional service. So if there is difficulty, why should we pray to Krishna? Then what will happen is, in that favorable argument, we will go to Indra. We will go to Brahmaji. We will say, Brahmaji, if you don't mind, I'm trying to be a pure devotee, so therefore I don't want to ask Krishna for anything. So therefore I have to ask you for something. See how the mind works. And in the favorable argument, we end up worshipping that which is not real. And we don't turn to the highest truth. If you read 4.11 of Bhagavad Gita, Ye yata mam prabhajyante tam sataiva bhajami aham. In the next two lines, I forget the next two lines, Sanskrit. But I do remember the translation. that the truth of the matter, Prabhupada writes and Krishna translates, is that all manner of beings, all offer him respect. Finally, everyone is worshipping Krishna. You see the line in this purport, where Prabhupada writes, even the materialist, if he becomes awed by the universal form, he becomes purified. For the devotee, we may not be so attracted to the universal form. But let's face it, even if we are in awe of the universal form, we will also be purified. Because we may be under the mistaken notion that we are already devotees. And we may think that we are not materialists. Sometimes we become very happy when we use the word karmis. Because we think that it doesn't refer to us. And we think that we are devotees, we are in separate categories. These karmis, you know. And when we use the word, you don't have to look at the person's face. Just hearing the way he says it, it is very derogatory. Karmi. Prabhupada would use the word karmi because Prabhupada was pure devotee. But when we use the word karmi, we should use it with a barrel full of caution. I don't say pinch, you know, a barrel full, because we should be very careful not to become subtly proud. I am devotee. Why should I hear universal form? What is there to hear about what part of the universal form is comprised of what? Because I am devotee, these things are not relishing. Instead, please bring me to 10th canto and let me hear some leelas from Krishna. That is very nice. Prabhupada says, you start from the first chapter. The first verse of Bhagavad Gita and the purport we can't get through. Because we say, Prabhu is very dry, it's very long. Then second verse, another long purport. Third verse is another long purport. Then it's all dry. Nothing on Krishna. From first canto, 19 chapters, everything is philosophy here and there. And my God, second chapter, our second canto now, what is this? You know, we are reading about all the dry things, about the first step in God realization, yoga, asana, this, that. Why should we hear? But Prabhupada says this is purifying us because this is coming from Krishna. But if we don't be submissive to that, then we won't be attentive. Then the culture of self-knowledge cannot develop. Then we'll say, never mind, I'll prick my ears when we come to 10th canto. Then we'll be alright. But 10th canto will never come because we may not live long enough till we hear 10th canto. Prabhupada was so smart that he put everything into his first canto. Because he knew that time was short. And very often, if you read his letters, he said, everything I've given, I've translated Bhagavatam, but I've given special potency to the first canto. So why we're not studying first canto? Why we want to jump here, jump there, jump here, jump there, when Prabhupada says, don't jump like monkeys, just stick to nice, regulated, consistent, persistent reading. The persistence comes, Prabhu said, Mataji, when we read the purport and our mind says, put it down, close the book. Then what we have to do? We have to persist, open book, read. And if you think the mind is going to give you funny things and funny ideas, read loud. I asked Guru Maharaj one time, Maharaj, every time I read, 5 minutes later, I want to close the book. Maharaj says, read very loudly. You close the book 5 minutes later. At least not 5 minutes earlier, but 5 minutes later. And I try it and I find it really helps. And if you really persist, after a while you get past 15-20 minutes, then you become a bit pacified. Then you find, okay, little bit of a role is there. And with devotees, the role becomes easier. We can just read and read and read Bhagavatam. And read and read and read and chant Krishna's names. Why? Because he is non-different from his universal form. Why? Because he is all in all. Because in the Virat Rupa, the implication is, if you satisfy Krishna, everyone becomes satisfied. That is why in the verse of 4.11 of Bhagavad Gita, you find Prabhupada quotes the verse 2.3.10 in the purport. Akama sarva kamova, moksha kama udari bihi, divrena bhakti yogena, purusha yajate, yajate purusha param. This is important verse. Whether we have desires, we don't have desires, whether we want liberation, just put Krishna in the center. We have to put Krishna in the center. And how to put Krishna in the center? Who gives us the explanation? None other than the demigods themselves who are being described in this verse. If you have time, Prabhu and Mataji, sometime in your usual study of Bhagavatam, don't deviate from that, but move sometimes in the parallel study to some verses. In 3rd canto, 5th chapter, there the demigods are praying to Krishna. Because when Krishna created the demigods, Prabhupada writes in the purport and in the translation, they were created, but they found that they had no potency to perform their administrative duties. Indra must have tried, but no rain came. Brahma must have tried, but nothing came. So like that, they became moros. And then they started submitting themselves to Krishna. Submitting, Prabhupada used the word, they submitted themselves in prayer to Krishna. Again, the word is submissive. They submitted themselves to Krishna. And in that submission, they prayed to Krishna very much. And Prabhupada makes an important point in the purport. He gives this difference between two trees. He says Mother Ganga is flowing very nicely. On the banks of the Ganga, two different trees can grow. A mango tree can grow, or a nimba tree can grow. If you taste the mango fruit, it is so juicy. If you taste the nimba fruit, Prabhupada writes it is hellishly bitter. Not even bitter, hellishly bitter. So Prabhupada uses that to say, why is one fruit sweet and one fruit sour, bitter? They are growing, they are coming from, the nourishment is coming from the same source. The same bank, same water, Mother Ganga. Why two totally different things are coming from the trees? The reason is the activity of the living beings. The fruitive activity of the mango, the fruitive activity and the results of the mango tree makes the mango relishable. The fruitive results of the nimba tree makes the fruit hellishly bitter. Then Prabhupada uses that to tell us that the devas could achieve sweetness and they could understand Krishna because they were submissive to him. But the demons who don't want to be submissive and attentive to Krishna, whatever that they take, whatever endeavor they take on, it becomes hellishly bitter. You will find that so many obstacles are there in our lives. So much difficulty there is. We are moros, we are not pacified, we are not joyful. Why? Because if we are coming from the same Father, universal form is for everyone, that's why it's universal. And yet, how we react to the universal form is very different. The demons become afraid or they want to fight. That is why universal form is there to check them. The devotees look at universal form, they pray to the Lord as all in all, and then they perform the devotional service. So the demigods prayed that way. And in one particular verse, in 3542, this verse the demigods tell us, and we should hear from them very nicely, and we should understand from them why they are considered part of the universal form. They give us the signs of hearing again. Yad Shraddaya Sutavatya Chabhatya. Shraddaya, Prabhupada translates as with eagerness. Sutavatya means by hearing. Cha bhaktya means with devotion. So the demigods say to Krishna, simply by hearing about your lotus feet, they don't even say activities, just hearing about your lotus feet, with eagerness and devotion. Samrajyamane hridaye vadhayaha. Samrajyamane hridaye, just by hearing with devotion, eagerness, and by cultivating meditation of Krishna in the lotus heart, in the heart of a devotee. Just by doing these two things, what happens? Jnanena vairagya balena. Balena means strength. Dhira. So just by hearing about Krishna eagerly, with devotion, and by meditating on him, that means by thinking about Krishna and contemplating on Krishna, the dormant transcendental knowledge of jnanena, the transcendental detachment from the material world, vairagya, balena, with great strength, will manifest in the heart of the devotee and he will become dhiraha. That means he becomes fixed in his devotional service. How? By hearing. Who's telling us this? The demigods. Who are the demigods? Indra, Ashwini Kumaras. They are all praying to Krishna. And they are praying so that we can understand the science of devotional service. And by doing that, Vrajema Tate means we must therefore take shelter of. Take shelter of who? Angri, Saroja, Pitam. We must take shelter of the sanctuary of that wonderful lotus feet of the Lord. Sanctuary, when we use the word sanctuary, what does that mean? When we have an animal sanctuary, that means the animals are protected. Right? When we go to Kenya, safari and everything, we hear of animal sanctuary. When you hear of people saying, I need asylum, political, you know, connections, espionage, you know, they leave one country, they jump over from north to south, they say, I want sanctuary, give me sanctuary. What does sanctuary mean? Sanctuary means the animals are peaceful there. They know that they will not be poached, they will not be killed, they will not be harmed. So Prabhupada doesn't translate any or how. He used the word sanctuary. The demigods are using sanctuary because only by hearing And only by approaching Krishna and meditating upon Him, whether by universal form, whether by two-handed form, but only Krishna and Krishna alone, then what happens to us? Then only we can really be under sanctuary. Then we'll be peaceful. Then the material things which may affect us won't hurt us. The hunters are around trying to hurt the animals. But the people who are enforcing the sanctuary, they throw and shoo the hunters away. So the hunters become, the animals become peaceful. So we are like that too. And in the purport to that verse, Prabhupada writes, the best way to hear is to be eager and to be submissive. And the best way to accept this transcendental sound of Krishna is to hear from His pure devotees. And how do we hear from the pure devotees? Prabhupada writes, without compromise, to take shelter and initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. If we take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master, then just by sitting down and hearing from the spiritual master, Prabhupada writes in that purport of 3542, one can definitely advance in the devotional service. And Prabhupada said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much recommended this process. What process? Of hearing from who? The lotus lips of the pure devotee, the spiritual master. So this is why when we hear submissively and eagerly, we must hear it from the devotees. We should not give favorable arguments. Why should I hear from devotees? I must only hear from the lips of the Lord. The lips of the Lord are wonderful, but the lips of those who are glorifying Him are greater. Greater. Krishna is more happy when we hear from the devotees than He even is if we hear from Him. That is why Srimad Bhagavatam is considered postgraduate, because it's more relishable, because it's coming from the lips of the devotees about Krishna. If I think I'm a very good singer and I go to Prabhu and tell Prabhu I'm a very good singer, you may think, alright, he's a good singer. If somebody else comes and tells you, Prabhuji, he sings very nicely, then you become more favorable to that person. So Krishna is like that too. No doubt, He is very powerful and all in all. But first He becomes pleased when others praise Him, because His natural tendency. We get that tendency from Krishna actually. Right? We say, oh, you know, we always like praise. Someone comes up to us and says, Prabhu, you're very nice. Immediately we are happy and joyful. Actually, it's not coming from anywhere else. It's only coming from Krishna. Because Prabhupada says, Krishna becomes happy. He becomes joyful when devotees praise Him. And when devotees praise Him and remember Him, they become purified. So they become joyful too. So if we glorify devotees, it is as good as glorifying Krishna. So importance of Guru cannot be underestimated in the process of coming to Krishna. The importance of devotees cannot be underestimated in the process of coming to Krishna. This is very important. And approaching Guru means that we should always glorify the great devotee. The best way to remember this and the concluding point in this verse is we can take an example of a demigod who tried to usurp the all-powerful power of Krishna and found that he was in difficulty. We all had Govardhan Puja very recently and we remember that Govardhan Leela. We know Indradev was very powerful, and we also know that daily or every year the residents of Vraj, they would offer great, great offerings to Indradev. We also know that Krishna, when he heard that, he came up to Nanda Maharaj and he spoke to all the devotees there and he asked them, why you are giving all this and to whom you are giving all this? And they said that, Nanda Maharaj replied that because Indra is taking care of the rains and the rains give us good grains and the grains are coming from the rains, therefore we should appease Indra. We should be grateful to Indra. Then in Krishna book, Krishna advanced 6 arguments. I don't remember all 6, but I remember 2 which struck me very much. He said, why should we glorify Indra so much? In the first place, it is all your fruitive activities and your karmic good reactions that are bringing Indra to you to give the rains. So frankly, who's controlling Indra? Your good karma is bringing Indra. So why you need to glorify Indra then? It's not necessary. Then the second argument he put forward was also very nice. He said that if at all, even if you don't glorify Indra, Indra's administrative function is to give rain anyway. So even if you don't bribe him with anything, he has to do his duty because he is not the highest. Above him there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So like that, Krishna gave nice arguments. And Nanda Maharaj and the devotees thought, yes, this is correct. So what should we do? Then Krishna said, instead of doing that, why don't you worship a personality who's really giving you shelter, day in and day out? And who was that personality? So Krishna said, you should worship Govardhan Hill only. He said that. In 10.21.18, Krishna says in 10.21.18, that of all the devotees of mine, the worship of Govardhan, I consider to be the highest. Because of all the devotees of mine, I consider Govardhan to be the best of the devotees. Of course, Krishna loves all devotees. But specifically, he has quoted this point to glorify Govardhan. Why? Because Govardhan Hill supplied everything to Vrajavasis. Govardhan Hill supplied beautiful shade. Govardhan Hill had wonderful caves where Krishna, Balaram, Gopas would hide and play. Govardhan Hill gave soft grass for the cows to eat. Govardhan Hill gave nice food for the cows and the animals and all the Vrajavasis. In times of heat, Govardhan Hill was a beautiful place to take shade in. So Govardhan Hill did not only protect the cows, the calves, it protected the gopas, the gopis, it gave nice pleasure to all residents of Raj, who are the pure devotees of the Lord. So in that verse of 10.21.18, Krishna glorifies Govardhan Hill and says, this is why Govardhan is to be glorified. And then Krishna told Nanda Maharaj that Govardhan should be the one that we should be praying to, because he has given everything. So the devotees naturally approach Govardhan and they give all wonderful foodstuff. That is what we did in Birama Kaliwan temple also. We offered Govardhan everything. And at that point of time, Krishna himself, to show the glory of Govardhan, he himself manifested a huge form, non-different from Govardhan Hill. He became Govardhan Hill. And when he became that form, he in fact accepted all the offerings. There is a point we should remember here. There was a lecture that my Guru Maharaj gave in London on Govardhan Puja. And he stated this point. He said that very often for Govardhan Puja, we are very happy to make so much offering for Govardhan. But we must not forget that besides remembering Krishna as manifestation of Govardhan, more important for our purification is to remember Govardhan as the devotee of Krishna. Because if we glorify Govardhan as devotee of Krishna, Krishna becomes more pleased than if we glorify Govardhan as Krishna himself. Krishna became so pleased with Govardhan Hill, that's why he manifested himself as Govardhan. And Maharaj was saying this point, that the point about Govardhan being so glorious is given in the Leela. What happened was finally, Indradev became very upset when all the offerings went to the pure devotee of the Lord. And when the offerings became part and parcel of the Lord because Lord accepted it, then what happened? Indradev decided that this rascal small boy Krishna has diverted everyone away from me. I am the person who is all in all to Vraj. I give them rains every year, faithfully and nicely, and yet he has done this. So what should I do? Immediately he sent his Samvartaka clouds. These clouds are only used at the point of devastation. They are never used before devastation. And yet, Indra decided at that point of time that we have to fast-track devastation. We'll start devastation in Vraj Bhumi. And he sent the Marut, the wind, to blow these clouds very swiftly. And he said, just inundate Vraj Bhumi. Don't give chance. Flood the whole place and let the residents know what happens when they want to listen to a small boy instead of offering it to me. So, the rains came, the hails came, and all the residents of Vraj, they had no place to go. Krishna at that point realized that Indra needs to be taught a lesson. He has unfortunately thought that he is all in all. He has become falsely proud, and he thinks that he knows everything, that he is the doer of everything. This is a lesson for us, and we should not unnecessarily condemn Indra, but we should learn from what Indra went through, that sometimes, or not sometimes, maybe always, we forget that we are not in control. We may be doing activities, but the ultimate controller and sanctioner must be Krishna. We are also little demigods in our little kingdoms, in our houses. And whenever we think that, something is not going right, we exhibit anger. And we become very angry. So demigod Indra also became very angry. And that anger became his undoing. Because Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill up, the entire hill up, with the small finger of his left hand. And that was it. Nothing else. Indra may be controlling the hands as a demigod, but he didn't have to use his hands to control Krishna's hands. Because Krishna's hand is controlling the whole world. So Krishna carried Govardhan Hill. And here it is important for us to know that by understanding this, we must understand one point. The residents of Raj were put into difficulty by a demigod because they turned to Krishna. We may be also put in difficulty by other people, other personalities, other living entities, because they want us to be dependent on them. Very often you find this happens in our lives. If you don't listen to what I say, you are in trouble. I am controlling you. Employers try that all the time on employees. Employees try that all the time on employers also. It's all two ways. We do that in family life. Without me, where are you going to get money? Without me, you think the children will be alright? Like that, we think that we are indispensable. But the moment we think that way, we should remember this Govardhan Leela. And we should remember the universal form. We should remember Indradev for teaching us this point. So Krishna lifted that hill. The residents were put in difficulty. We will also be put in difficulty in this material world. But Krishna pacified them by telling them, don't worry. Come under the Govardhan Hill and you will be alright. So we should also persist when the difficulties come. What should we persist in? Chanting of the transcendental sound vibrations of the Lord, which is non-different from Krishna. If we persist in the difficulties, then Krishna's Govardhan Hill is above our heads. All the rains of destruction that comes from the material world cannot touch us. They will not touch us. We may feel it for a while, but we remember this Leela and we take shelter of the devotees. That way we will become pacified. And that is what happened to the denizens of Raj. They became pacified. And because Krishna was there every day for 7 days, imagine, under the same shelter with Krishna, what else could they do but become joyful? They were chanting Krishna's glories, they were hearing about Krishna. Krishna was happy because the devotees were all around him. Sane Rishikesha, they were fixed in the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. They became joyful and pacified. This is Bhagavad Gita, this is Bhagavatam. They are interdependent because they say the same message. And the point Guru Maharaj ended in that lecture was that while we remember Krishna, we must remember that Krishna exhibited his supremacy over the demigods by getting the devotees to take shelter of him and his devotee Govardhan Hill. This is an important point we must remember. If we take the shelter of Krishna through the shelter of the devotee, we will advance by hearing from the devotee about Krishna. This is the point we must remember. And Maharaj was saying, Govardhan Hill is considered completely spiritual because he is teaching us how to become devotee. In good times and bad times, he was completely remembering Krishna. In good times, what did he do? He supplied so many nice necessities to the Vrindavan Vasis. In bad times, he took the force of the thunderbolts. All the thunderbolts that Indra was shooting, one after the other. All the samvatsaka clouds of rain, inundation, were all coming on Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill bore it all. He bore it all. And by doing so, in the bad times he was serving Krishna. In the good times he was also serving Krishna. So Maharaj ended by saying, if we want to be completely spiritual, we must be persistent in our service to the Lord. And the most important way to be persistent is to accept the lessons of the demigods, is to accept the prayers of the demigods by remembering that we cannot do anything without the agency of the pure devotee. Ya eka isho nijamaya yanaha sasarjayena anujama vishvam nayam nayasyapi puraha samihitam pashye malingam pridak isha maninaha. In 6.11.25 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the demigods again, they surrender to Krishna. And they say, Krishna, you are the only supreme. We may be coming from different parts. We may be taking administrative control of the creation. But you are supreme. But unfortunately for us, we always think that we are supreme. And when we forget that you are supreme and we think we are supreme, then what happens? Pashyama lingam pritam isha maninaha. We cannot see you. We can't hear you. So Prabhupada writes here, here's the formula on how not to see Krishna. If you don't want to see Krishna, then think that you are independent and you are supreme. And you won't see Krishna. But if you want to see Krishna, then hear from the lips of a pure devotee. And you'll be able to see Krishna in your heart. This is why we worship Govardhan. This is why it is very important for us to know that the universal form of the Lord is purifying us even now as we speak about Him. We should remember that point and remember any form of Krishna. As long as we are remembering about Krishna and hearing about Him from the lips of a pure devotee, submissively, with eagerness. Eagerness translates into what? Eagerness must translate into voluntary endeavor. You cannot be eager about something if you don't voluntarily endeavor and sacrifice something. If you think really carefully about it, you're eager to come for Bhagavatam, you will sacrifice your sleep. You sacrifice your time on a Sunday morning. Why? Because there is eagerness. And eagerness cannot come, Prabhu, please come for Bhagavatam. He's very eager. I cannot be eager if someone is pushing me to come for Bhagavatam. I can only be eager if I persistently, voluntarily try to come and hear about Krishna. Initially the eagerness may seem artificial. Eagerness doesn't mean I'm very happy. Always eager, always smiling. It may not translate into that. But eagerness can be the persistence that eagerly let us somehow try to hear from pure devotees. Hear from devotees. Keep hearing. Submissively. And submissively means to obey. Obey means whatever Prabhupada has stated, whatever Krishna has stated, whatever Guru tells us, that's all we should obey. Don't become Ekalavya. Ekalavya in Mahabharata supposedly was a great student. He was a Nishada prince who wanted to excel in archery. When he was not accepted by Dronacharya, he went away, formed a nice deity of Dronacharya in some forest and practiced in front of Dronacharya, his guru. He became so good that when the Pandavas were hunting in the forest, one of their dogs happened to come into the domain of this Nishada prince, Ekalavya. And when the dog opened the mouth before it could close in the barking, he shot successively 7 arrows into his mouth. When the dog went back, the Pandavas asked, who did this? They walked around and they found this Ekalavya. And they asked him, you shot these arrows, who is your guru? And he said, Dronacharya. Arjuna felt it. Arjuna thought, Dronacharya rejected him. He went into the forest. How did Dronacharya teach him? He went to Dronacharya. Dronacharya came and said, let's sort out this matter. He came before Ekalavya and said, Ekalavya, who is your guru? Ekalavya proudly said, you are my guru. He said, how did you learn? I learned it. When did you learn it? When you told me that you will not accept me, that's the time I went into the forest and I accepted you in my heart. And then I continued. So Dronacharya said, that's very good. So now what are you going to give me for Dakshina? If you say I am Guru, you must give me something. And Ekalavya said, tell me what you want and I will give it to you. I want your thumb. And so he cut off his thumb and gave it to him. Now without your thumb you can't shoot. And Arjuna remained the best archer. Many people speak, many commentators on Srimad Bhagavatam who are not bona fide in their sampradaya, they say that Ekalavya is the example of a great disciple in submission. Why? Because despite the fact that he did not have Guru in front of him, he made a form of Guru and just worshipped. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj says that in our sampradaya and in bona fide way, Ekalavya is the example of how not to be a good disciple. He is an example of a bad disciple. He is not an example of submissive hearing. Why? Because the very first instruction from Guru, Drona, was that I will not accept you. And he should have accepted it in his heart that there was a reason for that reason why his Guru did not want to allow him to learn the science from him. That first instruction he did not want to accept. Because in his heart, the real truth was he wanted to learn this art and become the greatest. And by the side, by byproduct, he wanted to glorify that he was a great devotee of a guru. This mood is subtle, and if we are not careful, it will affect how we hear the transcendental sound vibrations. If we want to hear it for reasons, motives, because we want to exhibit great power, then that submission to hearing and purification of the heart will not take place. If we reject it, dharma projita, these motives, and whatever Guru says, we follow. And we obey what Prabhupada has given, what the pure devotees have given. Then only we will benefit. The end result of this Ekalavya's so-called obedience to Guru was what? That he failed in the very endeavor he wanted to succeed in. The success of our spiritual life will depend on the glorification of the Lord through the agency of the devotees. And if we understand that, then even remembering these instructive lessons from the demigods and remembering that Krishna is all in all because he is universal in his form, we will be able to accept all difficulties of our material life in a very wonderful way. How? By persistent chanting of the transcendental sound vibration. Jai Dantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Are there questions, comments that Prabhu's Mataji would like to put forward? Yes, Soji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. I just have one question, Prabhu. You're speaking of being submissive and being humble. Sometimes I find that this submission and humility towards the spiritual master, and when we read Gita, when we hear Krishna or spiritual master, it's very easy to be submissive. But I find that the submission ends there. And on the ground, you know, with devotees who are apparently on the same level as you, that submission and humility is not there. In the sense that if, let's say, spiritual master gives you an instruction and you follow it, and you get to serve spiritual master more, and you get to serve like exalted devotees more, so submission to them is there. But when you're on the ground with the other devotees, then it creeps, that arrogance or that pride creeps in, that I'm serving these devotees better or more than actually what the other devotees are doing. So in that sense, submission ends below the spiritual master. Whoever comes down, there's only pride and like envy and this kind of things, because we have read so much about pure devotees and Krishna, so that awe and reverence is naturally there. But with devotees who are apparently on the same level, like just wearing white dhoti and white kurta, we see them as like fellow beings, and then that arrogance, that pride creeps in easily by actually justifying that I'm actually serving my spiritual master, I'm actually serving the Lord, but I'm doing it at a greater level because it apparently seems so. But how would we curb this, Prabhu?
There are two verses in Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, again interdependent, they can help us actually. In one verse that I remember, you have quoted it also, Prabhuji, 3:29:38, is that it? Atmanascha Parishyapi? 26, sir? 3:29:26 for Bhagavatam. Kapila Dev addresses the situation. He says, Atmanascha Parasyapi Yaha Karoti Anta Udraha. Then he says, Tasya Binna Drisho Mrityu Bayam, no, Bayam Vidade, no, Vidade Bayam Urbanam. He says that I cause the greatest of fears in the hearts of the living entities who even slightly discriminate between one person, one living entity and the other. So this point is very important. Discrimination is only useful to the extent that discrimination must be between matter and spirit. That which makes us remember Krishna, we should be with. That which makes us forget Krishna, we should not be with. This is real discrimination. As for how we relate with devotees, the very important thing we should remember is, except for us, all other devotees are greater. In fact, my Guru Maharaj goes so far as to say, except for us, everyone else is pure devotee. If we have this mood, then whatever any devotee tells us, and which we can check with sadhu, sastra and guru, we will find that we will be able to advance in the devotional service. Then that kind of association should keep us always in the submissive mood. If we believe that we know something and we are giving association, and we are actually not taking association, then the subtle idea is that I know more than you. Of course, Guru Maharaj knows more than me. But apart from Guru Maharaj, everyone else is under my purview. Then it becomes dangerous. So the constant, how to check this is very difficult. But we have faith in the scriptures. The scriptures tell us, don't need to over-endeavor or artificially endeavor. What we need to do is, Srinavatam Swa Katha Krishnaha. This is what we have to start doing. We have to hear about Krishna and study Bhagavatam and hear Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. If we do this constantly, these material avarice simply means greed, lust, the modes of ignorance and passion by which we discriminate people will automatically be diminished. They'll be diminished. And once they're diminished, we become fixed in the transcendental knowledge. So again, the solution of all solutions is always back to the basics. As long as we keep being submissive to Bhagavatam and to the devotees of the Lord who are with Bhagavatam, then we will always be safe in our treatment and our loving relationship with the devotees. The real defect always will be that we are not persistent in our sadhana. The mercy of the Guru comes when we are submissive. And the other point from Bhagavad Gita we should remember, in initiation lecture, Maharaj gave this point, that we always speak about 434 as the standard for understanding who Guru is. We understand that one must approach a spiritual master submissively and hear from him and render service unto him. In that way, right, we will advance in the devotional service. Then Guru Maharaj said that after you have taken at all, if you have submitted to Guru, then your conduct should be reflected in the next verse of Bhagavad Gita. And in the next verse, I'll read the translation, that having obtained real knowledge from the Guru, the self-realized soul, you will never again fall into such illusions. Why? Because with this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. So if we really want to be proud of the fact that we are so das and so dasi, the first thing we should remember is to be humble, that everything and everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. So how must we treat everyone? We must treat them with the same love and reverence that we would, because Krishna is in the heart of everyone. Of course, the pure devotees are so exalted that they will automatically command that level of submission from us. And we should discriminate, as Narada Muni has stated in Bhagavatam, that when you see an advanced devotee, we should fall at his lotus feet and take his association. When we are with our peers, we should study together and encourage each other in devotional service. Not, Narada Muni never says that we should compete with each other and say, I'm better than you, you're better than me. He says we should be friendly with each other. Friendly means we are working together for Krishna. And when someone is new to devotional service, we should not falsely think, I'm giving you mercy now. Come under my wing, I'm Siksha Guru. No, but we should serve the devotee by saying, Prabhuji, these are the things I've learned from the advanced devotees. Can I please serve you by sharing them with you? If you do that in that mood, then we will survive in our devotional service. Otherwise, it is very difficult. So we can remember 329, 26 of Srimad Bhagavatam, and we can put 435 of Bhagavad Gita together, and we'll find that they are very complete. So that is why, again, Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam are not contradictory. They are complementary. Is that okay, Prabhuji? Thank you. Prabhu, anyone else? Matajis, Prabhus, yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you very much for a wonderful class, Prabhu. Prabhu, we find that in our movement, a lot of expert teachers, they use a lot of their material knowledge, or even in the preaching activity, they update themselves with a lot of current affairs and a lot of, you know, analysis and all those things for presenting to the, you know, the modern educated people about the negative qualities of material world, and these are not from the Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. But we often hear that if we read Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, that is enough. And to some extent we also convince. But if we want to preach to some people, you know, just whatever is written in this thing, we may not be able to convince them because they are totally in a different, you know, the field. So how to draw a line that, you know, how much material subjects we have to refer, or how much we can study and how much Bhagavatam we can study, or we can just concentrate on these two books and that's it. And also, when we, you know, for the children, so they want to refer different story books or whatever, and when they want to mix with various kinds of people, they have to have a lot of, you know, the whatever is written in their books, a lot of things are not true. So we know when we see, but they are forced to study. There is no option. So here, and I was reading one conversation between Srila Prabhupada and Burijan Prabhu, wherein in about one material subject, and wherein Prabhupada mentions that the devotees should be expert and they should know something of everything and everything of something. So this is a comment Prabhupada makes. So how to draw a line, and you know, how much material things we need to study, and definitely we have to study Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, but whether it is worth studying is necessary to study. Hare Krishna.
But the answer, Prabhuji, I think the basis of all the things that we should remember is Dharma Projita Kaitava Atra Paramo Nirmat Saranshatam, right? Srimad Bhagavatam Mahamunikate Kimvaya Parishishvara. Shukadeva Goswami has conclusively stated that there is nothing else we need to do except read Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. There is no but after that. If you think about it, really there is no but after that. You're all looking at me with great expectancy. The truth is that if we really are fixed with Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, then as it is stated in chapter 12, one of the qualities of the devotee is Daksha. Daksha in Bhagavatam, he is known as expert. He was expert in his field. He made lots of children. So that was his expertise. He was very expert. So that way, one of the qualities of a devotee is he becomes expert. But he doesn't become expert because of his trying to acquire some material knowledge. He becomes expert on the basis of acquiring and following the devotional process. That comes automatically. This we must not forget. In ISKCON particularly, we find so many innovative preachers. But I'll guarantee you one thing. These innovative preachers who are touching the hearts of the devotees to chant, their process of hearing Bhagavatam, their process of chanting and following the instructions of their spiritual master is very expert. And because they are doing that, the building block is there. As Prabhupada said then, the natural quality of the devotee who becomes expert in all material and spiritual fields automatically will manifest. Krishna himself would suggest wonderful ideas to such devotees to expertly utilize preaching and bring it to a next level. Look at Sripad Maharaj, for example. Sripad Maharaj was given one sole task, that of getting the scientific community into the understanding of what science really is from Krishna consciousness perspective. But if you sit down with Sripad Maharaj and speak to him, you'll find that he was only doing two things. He was always chanting the holy names of the Lord in Kirtan, and he was always speaking from Bhagavatam. Every time you hear Maharaj starting a kirtan, he is quoting a Bhagavatam verse and then he chants. And yet Maharaj is exalted in the scientific community because, one, he was submissive to the orders of a pure devotee. Two, he followed the standard of following the process of devotional service. Always hear about Bhagavatam and chant the Lord's names. And because he did these building blocks and followed this Dharma Projita verse, there was no need for him to acquire anything else. We also have to go through our material education, and we will have to mix and mingle with the devote, with the living entities who are at this moment not coming to Krishna. At this moment. But we were also in their shoes maybe 2 weeks ago, or 1 month ago, or 10 months ago. But by the agency of a devotee who was sincerely trying to preach Krishna consciousness anyhow, in any means, we were benefited. So what I'm trying to say is that we should never think that there is no need or that there is something more that we need to cultivate apart from this. There is no need for us to understand anything else except the spiritual knowledge, because then Krishna will suggest the ways and the means to enhance our own devotional service and others also. So sometimes in the name of preaching, we may have to study so many things that come as byproduct. Like if you do preaching in corporate world, if you do preaching to people who are very new to this, you may have to use terms which are not even actually Krishna conscious, for example. Many of us have had that experience But why we are doing all this? The background is, are we reading Bhagavatam every day? Are we chanting Bhagavatam every day? Are we studying? Are we doing our rounds? If we do all that, then naturally Krishna will give us the intelligence to be able to preach this transcendental message. Then whatever that you're doing may appear to look material. But as stated in Prabhupada's purport of 3.9, I think, or 3.27, Prakate Kriyamanani, two people can be doing the same activity, but the consciousness of one devotee is that he is doing it based on the instructions of Bhagavatam, and the consciousness of another person may be that he is doing it for his own endeavors and his own motives. So our children will have to mix with society, they will have to learn knowledge which is not true from the viewpoint of the Supreme Absolute Truth, but we have to tolerate this material world. Agama Paino, you know that verse. Just like the summer and winter seasons keep coming up and down, this material world will also have its ups and downs. From the day we are born to the day we die, we must remember what Brahmaji heard for 1,000 years. Tafa. It is an austerity to tolerate each other. It is an austerity to tolerate the world. But we can only do that if we are 10% with Bhagavatam, 10% with Bhagavad Gita. So, no compromise. Please do not do some other thing and use that in the name of preaching. But move that aside first and always be with the basics. You can build a 20-story, 50-story building if you want, but if your blocks are not there, your building will collapse. You may shine initially like a great preacher, but if your sadhana, hearing and chanting is not present and completely in faith and not in submission, eventually the building must collapse. We have seen practically many shiny stars are there, but they will fade. They will fade. The fading comes because we do not have faith in Bhagavatam. So there should be no compromise. Don't worry about your ability to preach to someone. First start by following what is stated in Bhagavatam. What need is there for any other scripture except this? So we should put that into practice. Bury our heads in Bhagavatam, and then automatically Krishna will propel us to all the areas to become Daksha. And our children are protected always by Krishna. Because the devotees are parents, Krishna automatically will protect the children from all the difficulties of this material world. He will. It is our practical experience that the ups and downs are there, but everything will come to good if we are with Bhagavatam. So please, whatever happens, we should only put one thing in the center of our congregation and in our lives. For the whole of next year, we should take one theme only for Bhagavatam or for devotional service. Wherever we come together, we should all get together in small Bhagavatam discussion groups. Informally, anytime. Whenever, if Prabhu is free and I am free, if we come together, both of us should take out Bhagavatam. We should take any verse of where we are starting to read and read aloud. Read aloud the verse, read the transliteration, read the translation, read the purport, and then share. Share our realizations, or share, or try and understand and ask each other questions. And if there's nothing to ask and nothing to share, read the next verse and the next verse. Read for 1 hour Bhagavatam. Just read and hear, and you will see that there's a difference. This is what we want to do for the whole of next year. We want to push this very hard, and collectively if we do it, then really, really, we will find that this point that you so very wonderfully brought up to our attention will come true. That there is nothing else that is needed except Bhagavatam. Nothing else. We should just bury ourselves here. The opposite of Bhagavatam will be definitely that we will become disillusioned like the demigods. We'll become angry with Krishna. We'll think, why Krishna is not helping me? Anger brings us nowhere. Nowhere. Is that okay, Prabhuji? Huh? Is that okay, Prabhuji? Mataji? Actually, that's the standard. So whether it's okay or not to us doesn't really matter. We just have to accept it, actually, and not be angry about it. So we end here. I was in Abu Dhabi with Guru Maharaj, and he mentioned in this lecture about anger. He said, you know, don't succumb to anger. A, if you're angry, these things will be there. A means you're an atheist. We are atheistic when we get angry, because we think, why something is not happening the way I want it to be? Because I am controller. Therefore, there is no God. Therefore, I'm atheist. Then N means negation of the Vedic principles. When we don't follow the principles of Krishna, we become angry and we become disillusioned. Then G, greedy. When we are greedy for something, naturally we will never get it. That's nature of material world. When we don't get something, we fire everybody except ourselves. Then the cousin of greed is envy, A-N-G-E, envy. When we are envious of someone, then naturally we will scold the person, but we will say, I'm chastising you. Prabhu, you're not doing this, you're not pretending, you're not doing this. But the truth of the matter is, you have something which I don't have, I'm very frustrated with you and I'm angry with you. And that is another reason why we become angry. And if you have these four qualities, and if you are angry, then the destination for someone who is angry is R. R is the planet in the hellish planet known as Raurava. Raurava planet, if you read, you know, in hellish planets of Bhagavatam, it's a very dangerous planet to be in. You'll be torn apart by the Rauravas who are like vultures. And this is the result of anger. So please, whether you are demigod or living entities, doesn't matter. Don't be angry with anything that comes to us. Accept everything as universal because it's coming from Krishna. Jai Gurudev Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Jai Shri Gurudev ki. Itai Gaura Premanand.
Jai.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.
Jai.